This is what matters most, and I'm Matt Popovitz. Look, life is crazier than ever, and lots of people, maybe even you, are feeling anxious and overwhelmed. Today's message is designed to help you figure out what's most important and to experience the peace and joy that God intends for you. Because life is a gift, and it shouldn't be wasted on worry. I'd like to give you a resource, something to help you navigate the road ahead. Just go to mattpopovitz.com, click on the icon, and we'll send it to you. That's mattpopovitz.com. And hey, if you happen to live in the Houston area, I'd love to see you on a Sunday morning at St. Mark in Spring Branch. Head to stmarkhouston.org to plan your visit. Here's today's message. Thanks for listening.
Men, here is something that you need to embrace about yourself if you haven't already, and you need to begin teaching to your sons immediately. Here's the truth. You were made to work. You were made, you were designed to go out into the world, conquer something, stay busy, and do something. Not in the home, not solely in the home, but primarily outside of the home. How do we know? We look at Adam. God took your great-great-great-grandfather. He kicked him in the butt. He put him in the garden. And he said, work. And all of his grandsons, that's us, we have it hardwired into our souls to go out into the world and do something and conquer something. It's part of who we are. Before Eve was around, before the possibility of children was even an idea, before there was sin in the world, God said to Adam, work. Ladies, this is why your 9-year-old boy can't sit still. This is why your son wants to go in the yard and build a fort. It's why he pees outside. It's why your husband gives him a thumbs up. This is why your husband, even though he is physically at home, he struggles not to have his heart and his mind at work. It's why he might need hunting trips and Best Buy trips. It's because he was wired to go out into the world, engage the world, and kill that animal running wild or conquer that latest piece of technology in the world. It's part of who we are. So when it annoys you, ladies, don't get mad at us. Blame God. It's all his fault. Right? It is part of who we are. One prominent sociologist, I'll quote him a lot throughout this series, he writes some fantastic stuff about maturity and masculinity. His name is David Gilmore. He writes that this idea of men going into the world to work, he says that it's so ingrained into the DNA of men that throughout cultures and throughout history, men have been judged as men based almost solely on one criteria, not how effective their home is, but how effective they are in working in the world. Throughout cultures, there is a common question that men ask each other when they meet one another. They shake hands, they share names, and then the next sentence out of their mouth is what? So what do you do? You've had that conversation, haven't you? And no matter what the other guy says, he could say, I'm president. I have flown to the moon. I am an assassin and I kill bad guys. The other guy will hear that and say, huh, I could do that. That is part of who we are. We are wired to work. Now, if you went to Sunday school, if you've been hanging out here, we love to talk about Genesis. You know the other half of Adam's story. The story continues. Eve enters the picture. And rather than protect his family, as he's called to do, Adam allows Eve to be disturbed by the serpent, who convinces both of them to eat from the tree that God had told Adam. He told Adam not to touch. It's not Eve's fault that they eat the fruit. It's Adam's. It happened on his watch with rules he was given. Right? And here is what happens as a result. Jump ahead now to Genesis chapter 3, start at verse 17. Because of his rebellion, Adam receives a punishment, what the church has historically called a curse that flows through all of his sons, meaning all the guys in this room today. Life as a man would no longer be pure joy in the world. Life as a man, as a result of Adam's sin, is now a life of bruising self-sacrifice. It's a life of pain. Last week, we talked about embracing the responsibilities of being a man, primarily that responsibility to care for the well-being and betterment of the women around you and in your life. And I talked to several guys who walked out of here, and they were like high on masculinity. They were ready to kiss their wife and kill some bad guys. And according to God, in the garden with Adam, the life of a real biblical man is destined to be a life of backaches and burden, a life of blood and sweat. It's destined to be a life of pure sacrifice. Ask any guy in this room who is working for a living and who is honestly trying to balance the demands of home and world, who is trying to be the best in his field and also an attentive husband, a present dad, a good son, the kind of guy who will hold open doors, help a buddy, serve at church, and grab a gun if something goes bump in the night. Ask any guy who's trying to live that out, and they will look at these words from Genesis 2 and Genesis 3. They will see that curse, and they will say, yeah. Being a guy is great, but there are days when being a guy is incredibly painful. When it is a huge burden. And men, do me a favor, and actually do yourselves a favor. And if you have a son, don't let him find this out on his own. Don't let him believe as he grows up that being a man is just about liking girls and going to work. Help him to understand as early as you can that because of sin, there's a curse involved in being a man. Because of sin, there is sacrifice involved in being a man. Help him understand that being a man means you are going to have to work harder than every other guy in your industry in order to get ahead. Help him understand that being a man means laying up at night wondering how you're going to pay bills. Help him understand that at times he's going to have to come home late and have a conversation with his wife he wasn't expecting. And the next morning get up early and take his kid to soccer when even Jesus is still asleep. Help him understand that being a man is a life of willingly taking burden on your shoulders, of sweating to the point of pain and blood and giving your all for the sake of other people. Help him know that now. Help him understand that if being a man is tough, it doesn't mean you're doing it wrong, it means you're doing it right. Being a man is a life of bruising self-sacrifice. Now, ladies, that does not mean that your life is easier. I'm not saying that at all. And I understand that as I stand up here and talk about how tough life is for guys from Adam on downward, that some of you are sitting there thinking, tough. Try breastfeeding the baby, teaching a toddler how to go to the bathroom, making out a grocery list and talking to your son's sixth grade teacher all at once while driving. Try that. That's tough and dangerous, I might add, but you're exactly right. No, here's the thing. Sin, brokenness, manifests itself differently for men than it does for women. Women, for the most part, you never question the fact that embracing womanhood is going to take anything less than all you have. Being a wife, being a mom, being a daughter, being a sister, you understand inherently that is not only going to drain you, but it will consume you. And the vast majority of women, they know no other way to live their life than just all in at 100 miles an hour, being wife, mom, friend, sister. They hold nothing back. They let womanhood kind of consume who they are. Not so with guys. Not so. Even though we might want to embrace responsibility, even though this life is a life of self-sacrifice, one of the biggest temptations for us is to avoid sacrifice and instead to fight for self-preservation. Even though we embrace responsibility, to try to do so in such a way that ensures we lose as little of our masculine identity or our blood and our sweat and our energy as possible. It's a battle between total self-sacrifice, losing yourself in the call, and self-preservation. Let me illustrate this a bit. I believe that this struggle with self-preservation comes in two primary forms for guys. First, you have guys who try to avoid the curse of sacrifice in manhood, and they do so by trying to pursue some selfishness on the side. This is the attitude that says, well, if I've got to give my all in being a husband and a father, then I'm going to have a little fun while I'm at it. It's the man cave that you escape to. It's the endless guy nights that you go to without your wife. It is the hobby you constantly retreat to. It's the club soccer league. It's the golf game that demands massive amounts of time and massive amounts of money. And the big secret inside of you is that you're not simply doing it because you enjoy it, but you see it as an escape from responsibility and really a way to preserve some of your masculine identity apart from your masculine responsibility. It's this thing inside of you that says, well, if all else fails, they're not going to get this from me. They're not going to get the drinking with my buddies from me. No way I'm giving that up. They're not going to get my golf game. No way I'm giving that up. I got to have my golf game. Got to have my me time. Right? There's no way they're going to get me from sports. Ever. I love you. I will work for you. I will fight for you. But I will watch football. Preservation. And guys, let me tell you that is a very dangerous attitude. It's dangerous because every effort to escape those you serve comes at the expense of those you serve. They're the ones who foot the bill. Likewise, because you see it as an escape from responsibility, it plants very subtle seeds of bitterness towards your responsibility. Especially when the day comes, and the day will come, that your wife, your kid, or your boss says, hey, you know that thing you really like to do? It's kind of getting in the way. I firmly believe, although, you know, it's really just my pastoral opinion, I firmly believe that real biblical men should not have hobbies and passions that consistently pull them from wife and family and home. Should not. Now, that's just my thought. I don't have an explicit verse for that. I do believe it's biblical, and I do believe it's gleaned from many, many conversations with lots of you and looking at my own life, but the only verse I have is 2 Opinions chapter 2, okay? But it never ends well. Ever. If you pursue selfishness on the side in any form, apart from the ones that you serve, it never ends well. Either you will end up despising your family because they make it so difficult for you to go have fun, or your family will end up despising you because you're gone having fun. Or at worst, both will happen. And men, you have to understand that your desire to go have some selfishness on the side is something that you have to give up as part of your call to sacrificial living. It's part of what dies in order for you to be a man. It's a part of the burden that you bear, giving that up in order for you to fully and completely love other people. And the question is not if you'll give it up, but when, and whether or not it's going to be pried from your hands like a selfish child, or whether you will willingly lay it down at the altar of serving others better. That's the question.
I hope you're enjoying today's message. For more of what matters most, you can head to mattpopovitz.com. There you'll find other messages. You can support this ministry as well as access your free gift. Oh, and if you're looking for a local church and you live in Houston, come and see what's happening at St. Mark Houston. To plan your visit, head to stmarkhouston.org. Thanks for listening, and back to today's message.
Second way that men choose to kind of preserve themselves rather than go all in and fully sacrifice for the responsibilities that they're bearing is that men will pursue laziness. And this is rampant. When I was 8 years old, 8-year-old boy, I absolutely hated the idea of taking a shower or a bath. I did, like most 8-year-old boys. Like anything that would result in me being clean, I was against. Unfortunately, my mother had opposite ideas. And so she would send me upstairs at the end of every night to take a shower, take a bath. And so I'd go up there and say, okay, Mom. And then I'd shut the bathroom door and I'd sit next to the bathtub. And I would just turn on the water and hang out for like 10 minutes. Then I would turn off the water, throw a towel around my waist, put some water in my hair, walk out and say, all done. But I still stunk. Now, If you've had boys, maybe you've had that happen in your home. Some boys never grow out of that idea, that attitude towards life. Now, thankfully, I did. I smell nice. But some boys never grow out of that attitude. I like to call them bare minimum men. They do the bare minimum at home. I mean, they show an effort at home, but it's bare minimum. They fly under the radar at work. I mean, they do their work, but they just try not to be noticed. Not get a raise, not get fired, whatever. Just bare minimum. They go to church, but if you press them, they're really just here to pacify their wife. They do enough to get credit. He's a good guy. Enough to get credit, but not enough to break a sweat. There is no passion, no proactivity, no energy in his life as a man because he's trying to keep himself from leaving it all out on the field in being a man. And guys, if that's you, if you are bare minimum boy, if that's you, then what you need to understand is that you have fallen for one of the devil's oldest and simplest of lies. If he can't get you to die for the wrong things, he'll convince you to die for nothing. But guess what? At the end, you still die. But with very little to show for it. So men try to preserve themselves by having some selfishness on the side or some laziness in their life. It's all this attempt to avoid leaving it all out on the field in loving others and in owning their responsibilities. But as you might guess, the Bible points us in the exact opposite direction as men, from self-preservation to embracing self-sacrifice. Turn now to 2 Timothy, deep in the New Testament. 2 Timothy chapter 2. Here you have Paul encouraging a young pastor who's going through some incredible burden in his life of engaging the world with the message of Jesus. Starting at verse 3, listen to the words that Paul uses to describe the life of a man living out his calling to bless the world. Listen to how much of a contrast it is to ideas like selfishness and laziness. Listen to this. Paul writes to Timothy, share in suffering as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Circle the word soldier if you can. No soldier gets entangled in civilian pursuits, since his aim is to please the one who enlisted him. An athlete is not crowned, circle athlete, he's not crowned unless he competes according to the rules. It's the hardworking farmer, circle farmer, who ought to have the first share of the crops. Think over what I'm saying, for the Lord will give you understanding in everything. Paul says, look, this is how a godly man goes about his business. Timothy, I understand, your life is difficult. You're getting persecuted. People around you are getting killed for the gospel. Life as a guy is tough. This is not what you signed up for. I understand that. But this is how a godly guy goes about his business. He works like a soldier, knowing that there are orders that are bigger than him and more important than him that he has to fulfill. He trains like an athlete, knowing it's going to take every single thing that he has. And he labors like a farmer who has to make his own food. What do all those jobs, all those callings have in common? Success comes at the expense of self. Victory comes at the expense of taking a bullet, bruising your body, putting everything you have into everything that's at stake. What Paul is saying is that I know it's tough, but look, a real man does not make excuses. He does not complain. He sucks it up. He endures pain. And he embraces the full cost of being a man. He embraces it. He understands that there is no other way to live than with your body in the bunker, your feet on the court, and your hands in the dirt. Life is tough, man. You're going to have to work hard. You're going to have to sweat. You're going to have to toil and worry. But a real man embraces the bunker. A real man does not whine. He does not complain. He embraces the bunker he's in, the court that he's on, the field that he's been given. And he understands that just because it's tough, it doesn't mean that he's struggling. It means that he's a man. Let me just say to you, again, just for more from my conscience than anything else, I am tired of whining guys. Of guys who who complain that they don't get to go out as much as they used to. Of guys who go on about the fact that their wife is needy or their kids are messy and expensive, who talk about their boss, but never have the guts to step up and make a change or say something. Stop. No one wants to hear it. You're not alone. Don't make excuses. Endure the pain. Make a change. Do something about it. That's what men do. Take the whole cost upon yourself and endure it. Now, if it sounds like I'm lacking compassion, that's because I am. And the reason is simple, because when men refuse to bear the full weight of what it means to be a responsible man, when through their subtle selfishness or laziness, they try to preserve themselves, what they are forgetting or just outright ignoring is the fact that a life of self-sacrifice is the noblest of lives to live. Men, think about this for a second. Yes, God punished Adam, and that punishment is flowing through you. But think about what this means. The God of the universe has asked you not only to live for this world, but to die for this world. He's asked you not solely to go out into the world and work, but to shed your blood for this world. He's asked you to go last so that others can go first. He's asked you to sweat more so that others can stay comfortable. He's asked you to redeem your curse by doing something incredible with it. And that's not a burden. That's an honor. He's asked you to live your life as a man, imitating the life of his son, Jesus Christ. I mean, have you caught that yet? Through your sacrifice and your death, people get blessed. Through you giving up your desires, you setting aside your needs, people get blessed. John 15, verse 13. Look at these words. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You cannot love your family. You cannot love this world without dying for them. You can't, because that's what love looks like. That is what Christ has done for us in his death on the cross that forgives every single one of your sins. And that is the life he has called you to imitate and live as a man. That's not a burden. That's an honor. How can it be beneath you if it was the goal of our God? And this last section is so key. Because apart from the work of Jesus Christ on the cross and the power of Jesus Christ in the empty tomb when he rose again 3 days later, there is no sense and no seeming worth in living life as a man. The only thing that brings meaning to a life of sacrifice as a man is if his own identity is completely tied to the work of Jesus Christ. Your identity must be tied to Jesus. The only thing that makes sense out of this all is what Jesus has done for us. Look how Paul closes his time with Timothy, starting at verse 11. He says, if we have died with Christ, we will also live with Christ. If we endure, we will also reign with him. If we deny him, he also will deny us. If we are faithless, he remains faithful, for he cannot deny himself. The only thing that makes a life of sacrifice for others worthwhile is Jesus, who through his own death brought life to other people. The only thing that makes it make sense is that we're mirroring and mimicking Jesus. The only thing that makes it worthwhile for you to give up everything that you have to love other people is the fact that the resurrection of Jesus Christ guarantees that beyond the wars of a beautiful marriage, beyond the competition in work, beyond the labors of loving and raising a family, there is victory, there's a prize, and there is a crop. That even if you give your life in the process of redeeming this curse and blessing others and losing everything you have in loving other people, there is forgiveness of your sins and there is an eternity waiting for you.
Hey, it's Matt. I hope you enjoyed what matters most. Here's what I need you to know. Life is a gift and it shouldn't be wasted on worry. I want to help you figure out what's most important and to experience the peace and joy that God intends for you. So for more content, you can head to mattpopovitz.com. That's Matt, P-O-P-O-V-I-T-S.com. There you can also support this ministry, as well as access your free resource, a little something to help you navigate the road ahead. I'd also love to see you on a Sunday morning. If you're in the Houston area, head to stmarkhouston.org to plan your visit. In the meantime, hit me up on Instagram, @mpopovitz, or at facebook.com/mattpopovitzministries. Thanks for listening. Now go and hold tight to what matters most.